Welcome to the Nuclear Medicine and Molecular Medicine Podcast. Podcast 21, The Real Effects of Stress. Welcome to our episode, and if this is the first time you've heard the podcast, and I'm sure there'll be quite a few in that category, having some of you might have got an iPod or an MP3 player for Christmas, then this is great to hear from you. I hope you come back and listen to many more episodes. But before you do that, why don't you download some of the old episodes? There's 20 episodes there, and amazingly, all of the episodes are really quite current. We've been lucky enough on the podcast to pick up topics that really have stood the test of time and are really still very current in terms of what's happening in the world of nuclear medicine. We've been lucky to have picked the right topics and spoken to some of the most interesting and influential people in nuclear medicine. So please go back and have a listen to some of our old episodes. But before you do that, perhaps you might want to give me a bit of feedback. I've got a question for all of the listeners there, and I'd really appreciate it if you can get back to me as soon as possible. I'd be interested to know what your views are on advertising in the podcast. There are some advertisers who might be interested in the podcast, and I'd like to know whether you think it would be intrusive or would deter from your enjoyment of the podcast, or whether it's going to cause problems, particularly if the podcast is used for CPD requirements or professional development requirements. If you use the podcast for professional development purposes, I'd really like to hear from you, and I'd also like to help you out in any way I can to make the podcast part of your official CPD requirements. So please let us know if this advertising would cause any problems for that, because I'm here to serve the nuclear medicine community and help out in any way I can. You can get in touch with me by looking at the website. There's various ways to get in touch with me. That's at nukecast.com, nuccast.com. And at that site, you can find my email address. That's rob@nukecast.com. Or you can see how you can provide audio files, or by clicking on a button on the website, you can record a message straight to me. You might want to ask a question. You might want to tell me what you'd like to hear in the podcast, or you might have something that you can contribute. For example, an interview with one of your colleagues, or an interview conducted at a meeting, or perhaps a debate, anything at all. I can add to the podcast. I'd love to hear. I'd also love to hear about any topics that you might have or suggest. I really need some more material. I'd love to hear from you about any material that you think you can provide for the podcast. If you've got any great ideas, any interviews, any people you'd like to listen to, any offers of interviews, please get back to me. But before we go any further, let's get straight into the interview for this month's podcast. And that's with Dr. Verona, and he's going to talk to us about what really happens when we do stress, when we do exercise.
We're back in Prague again, and I've just listened to a very interesting paper from Dr. Verona from Italy, and it really answers a lot of the mysteries that we've had in nuclear medicine about why some things happen or why tests happen. So before we get too much into the paper, perhaps I could get Dr. Verona to introduce himself and tell us a little bit about himself and his history and where he works.
Well, I am working in Varese, which is a small town near Milan in Italy, and I'm basically working as an interventional cardiologist, but also I have an interest in nuclear medicine, and I work together, strictly together, with colleagues in nuclear cardiologists.
Now, I found his paper particularly interesting because it did some things that we don't often see in nuclear medicine papers. It infused into coronary vessels two different types of drugs, and it also looked with intravascular ultrasound, and it also looked at the results of angiography. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about what you did with your patients.
Yes, basically we try to give an answer to what you previously call a mastery. Sizable proportion of patients with chest pain or suspected ischemia that have abnormal exercise perfusion defects and do not show any narrowing of the coronary angiography. So normal coronary angiography or near normal coronary angiography with perfusion defect. The problem is now to answer the patients about what happens to his heart, if the heart is normal, if the coronary artery are angiographically normal, why the patient complying for chest pain, why the patient said perfusion abnormality, why the nuclear medicine said you have to go to a cath lab because you have some problem in your coronary artery. And what we have tried to study is the role of vasomotion in the genesis, in the pathogenesis of these perfusion defects. We found that there are several mechanisms that may play a role. There are microvascular dysfunction, there are dysfunction of the epicardial vessels, there are vasomotion abnormality due to endothelial dysfunctions of the epicardial vessels, and vasomotion abnormality due to arterial reaction to different agents that are not strictly endothelial mediated.
So what you did, you gave intracoronary adenosine to see a look at vasodilation, and then you did intracoronary acetylcholine to look at vasoconstriction or vasoconstriction in abnormal patients. And then you also did vascular ultrasound to see where the plaque was, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but you basically discovered that even in a blood vessel was normal, if it had vasoconstriction caused by the acetylcholine, then it would have a plaque, and if it had a lack of dilation caused by the adenosine, then it would also have a vulnerable area of the coronary artery. Is that correct?
Is it correct? Basically, when you have a patient with perfusion defect, it is probably larger, the defect, if you have endothelial dysfunction of the epicardial vessels. When you have a patient with this disturb in the microcirculation, you may have just small defects and a small amount of occult coronary atherosclerosis. But in patients, we show a large perfusion defect with normal coronary angiography. You have to look for endothelial dysfunction of the epicardial vessel. And infusion acetylcholine, you may show that the vessel vasoconstrict, and this is associated with occult disease. So the vasoconstriction of the epicardial vessels is a marker of occult disease, of occult atherosclerosis, in its early phase that you cannot see with angiography, but that brings prognostic, it is prognostically important because it generates a large perfusion defect.
Well, this is something which answers a few questions. Firstly, for a long time now, we've known that patients with a abnormal nuclear scan but a normal angiogram actually have a poor prognosis. And that's been studied in longitudinal, long-term study by Haller and others over a long period. The other thing is that it's interesting that studies that add exercise to the stress protocol tend to have a better negative predictive value. So if in patients that have either exercise or exercise plus adenosine, those patients tend to have a better negative predictive value. So it's around less half of 1%, whereas patients who just have adenosine, maybe 1.2% or something like that in terms of events per year, so almost twice as bad. So maybe that's why adding exercise helps improve the outcome of studies, even though the actual blood flow in exercise is a bit less than what happens in adenosine. Do you think that could be one of the things that are happening here?
Exercise is definitely the most physiologic stimulus and involve all the mechanism that the heart may put in the field to manage increases blood flow in response to the exercise and the metabolic demands. So exercise has to be performed, and you have to believe to the result of exercise myocardial perfusion. As far as prognostic information is interesting. The message that arises from our work is that when you have abnormal in perfusion and a normal coronary angiography, we suggest do not stop here. Look at other factors. Look at vasomotion, study vasomotion in the cath lab, and give an answer to the patients. And the second message is that if you want to assess a patient non-invasively, it is better to use exercise, because exercise give you information of all the mechanisms that are involved in myocardial adaptation, blood flow adaptation of the myocardium, and all prognostic information. On the other hand, adenosine or dipyridamol do assess better microvascular function, and they give similar result to exercise if the patients have significant obstruction of the vessel or the epicardial vessel. But in the case of endothelial dysfunction, it is I don't believe that it is the best test. The best test to use for endothelial dysfunction is acetylcholine.
Yes, well, of course, in exercise, you're doing both. You're causing vasoconstriction in the narrowed parts of the vessel, and you're causing vasodilation in the other parts of the vessel. So
exercise is more physiological. Is the right test.
Yes, exercise is the right test. And if you can't do full exercise, then perhaps you can add exercise to your adenosine study, which I think a lot of papers have shown advantages that. And we've shown, lots of papers have shown these things happen, but we haven't understood why. I think your paper is excellent because it tells us why this happens. Yes, and I really appreciate it. I thought it was fascinating. Have you enjoyed the meeting here in Prague? And what do you think about Prague? What do you think about it so far?
I've already been in Prague several years ago, and even this time I enjoyed it very much. I found it's very young and growing town, and it's exciting.
Yes, I recommend anybody to come to Prague. It's a very young, vibrant place, but also with a relaxed attitude. So it's an excellent place to come and visit. And if you want to learn about nuclear medicine, I suggest you visit Italy, because they're doing some excellent work there. So thank you again. Thank you very much again for speaking to the podcast.
Thank you to you.
I think it's very important that we understand what happens when we work in nuclear medicine. We must understand that nuclear medicine is a physiological discipline, just like disease is a physiological process. So if we understand what happens in our physiological process, we can explain to our referrers, to the cardiologists out there, what happens and why we're different, and provide different information to what they'll get from an angiogram or from a CT angiogram or even from an echo, because really that's looking at heart wall motion, something that's a bit different to what happens when we do a nuclear stress. I hope this has been interesting for you, and we'll have lots more coming up in the new year. We've got some really good podcasts coming up, so please stay tuned. Subscribe to us at newcast.com so that you can hear on any new episodes that are coming up, and you'll get the episode sent to you straight away as soon as it comes out. And don't forget, please send me back your feedback, rob@newcast.com. So have a happy holiday, have a happy Christmas, a happy Hanukkah, a happy Tabaski, and a happy New Year. So, let's hear from you soon in the new year. Bye now. Cheerio.